Now Bertrand Russell is one of the proponents of this theory, and he wanted to show that this theory is so powerfully valid, and if it is established thoroughly, then the hypothesis of consciousness can be removed altogether forever. But he had one big difficulty. He was a very honest thinker. He tried his best to prove this theory, and to prove this theory he tried to show that every event is atomic. And every event being atomic, he said, every event can be described atomistically. If every event is atomic, it can even be described atomically. That is to say, you speak only one word, no other word at all, and yet that event can be described. So he wanted to invent a new language appropriate to this kind of a theory, that every event is independent of the other. So you should be able to speak also in such a way that each event is complete by itself, another event is complete by itself, a third event is complete by itself, having no interconnection between them. Or if relations are there, they are only external. He used to give the example of uncle and nephew. Uncle is an event, nephew is an event. Now it is true that there is no uncle without a nephew and no nephew without an uncle. But uncle could have existed even without a nephew in himself. And a nephew could have existed even if uncle were not to exist. So he said that nephew-uncle relationship is external. It is not that nephew must exist in order that uncle exists. Relationship of course must exist. For a relationship this interdependence is necessary. But for the actual existence of the uncle, presence of nephew is not necessary, and vice versa. But the moment you use the word uncle and nephew, relationship is established. So he wanted to find a new language in which you don't have to use the word nephew and uncle. Because the moment you use this term, it gives an impression that nephew can't exist without uncle, uncle can't exist without a nephew. He went on searching, searching, ultimately said, I will use language in which there will be only one word, this. This, that's all, not at all, only one word. You indicate this, it is atomic. This is atomic, that is atomic. So each word has only one word, namely this. If you want to indicate, don't use a long language in which this is so and so, that is so and so. Simply say this. He went to that length. But then he admitted that the moment I say this, I'm obliged to imply that this is different from that. Otherwise, how can I indicate this? If I do not at the same time indicate it's different from the other, I can't indicate this at all. So he came to the conclusion, ultimately, that this still has not worked. And he had a program in his life that one day he will try to find out a language which will be purely atomic, which he could not until the end of his life. In any case, it only shows that the theory of materialism, even in its extreme effort, fails. Even in the extreme effort, you grant everything. So you will see that all the dialogues that we have so far, in each dialogue the materialist is not able to answer ultimately. Now let us take the other way around. Let us assume that consciousness is at the root of things. Not matter, but consciousness is at the root of the whole universe. Can we then explain the universe? Now just as the materialist has a difficulty in explaining consciousness coming out of matter, similarly the theory of consciousness have a big difficulty because of the presence of matter. if everything is conscious, how can there be matter which is unconscious? This is the big blockade for the theory of consciousness. How can there be matter which is unconscious if ultimate reality is consciousness?
But they argue that they say that it is only in your consciousness that you perceive matter. So after that argument, we don't know how to proceed. They say that it is in your consciousness that you perceive matter. If you didn't have consciousness, you wouldn't perceive matter.
Yes, but that argument is not conclusive. It is argued on behalf of the materialist that it is true that as far as you are concerned, for you things exist only so long as you are in consciousness. But how do you prove that they don't exist when your consciousness is not present? It is true that when you perceive a thing, then it is in your perception that the thing exists. But does it prove, therefore, that when your consciousness is not at work, that thing still continues or does not continue to exist? For example, we had the theory of a philosopher who said that if an idealist is right, idealist is one who regards consciousness at the root of things, as opposed to materialist. So he says, if idealist is right, then the train, as it enters into the platform, it begins to have wheels. When it goes out of the platform, it ceases to have wheels. Why? Because when the train is moving in a place where nobody is around to see, you can of course see the wagons because you are seated or you are experiencing it, but you are not seeing the wheels. So wheels must not be existing at that time. So the absurdity will be that wheels come into existence when the train enters into a platform, because there human beings are all around on the platform, so they can see the wheels. So do you mean to say that the wheels come into existence when the train enters into the platform, and they cease to have to be there when the train goes out of the platform? But your argument remains. As far as you are concerned, wheels exist only because you see them. If you are not there to see, you are not even there to make a statement that the wheels exist. But this argument does not stand very powerfully because of another reason also. That if things exist only because you see them, then how is it that you cannot see things at your will? If things exist only because you see them, how is it that you cannot see things at your will? How is it you are obliged to see this machine and you are not able to see here a river? Think of a river. If river exists upon your thinking or upon your seeing, then as soon as you think of a river, river must come into existence. It doesn't come into existence. Therefore, there must be a reality independent of your thinking, and therefore this idealist theory fails in answering this question. But idealist theory, as I told you, has an upper hand when we discuss all the theories of materialism. Even if things exist independent of your perception, you have many problems to answer, and each question we have raised up till now, six theories we have presented. In six different forms, we have presented materialism. And in each theory, ultimately it fails to answer. Therefore, the theory of idealism is stronger than the materialist, as compared to materialist. But now the idealist has this problem. How do you show that from consciousness matter can come into existence?